musicians on Tuesday night on Radio 3, along with the same from Wales. And against that, the music of Jerry Lee Lewis, John Cage and Robert Schumann. It can mean but one programme, Late Junction, Tuesday night at 11. But this is BBC Radio 3, between 90 and 93 FM, on digital radio and also online. The time now is 11 o'clock, and on a Sunday evening it's time for Jazz Lineup, presented this week by Claire Martin.
Hello and welcome to our brand new time slot of 11 o'clock. And on today's show, the second instalment of concert highlights from the father of Ethiopian jazz, Mulatu Astatke, recorded at this year's Glasgow International Jazz Festival. Plus an interview with the iconic guitarist Pat Metheny about his recent solo guitar album, which includes versions of popular classics composed by Burt Bacharach, Henry Mancini, Anton Carlos Jobim, and Lennon and McCartney.
Harmony for me is a kind of big part of what music is, and this particular period that I'm referencing on this record may have been the last period where harmony was sort of equal to melody and rhythm.
Well, stay tuned for that interview with Pat Metheny and to hear tracks from his new album later on in the show. 7 years ago, whisper-voiced New York vocalist Gretchen Pallotta won the prestigious Thelonious Monk International Jazz Vocals Competition. Since then, she's continued to impress with her smoky tones and funky reworkings of standard and pop repertoire. And her much-anticipated third recording is out now and receiving great reviews. The Guardian's John Fordham is a fan and gave the CD The Lost and Found 4 stars. Miss Pallotta produced the record with pianist Robert Glasper, and here is his arrangement of the Miles Davis classic, Blue and Green.
To
Gretchen Pilato singing Blue and Green, arranged by Robert Glasper. And that track featured Taylor Eichste on piano, Derek Hodge on bass and Kendrick Scott on drums. And it was taken from her new release out on the Oblique Sound label called The Lost and Found. And you can go and hear Gretchen at the lovely King's Place in London on the 18th of November as part of this year's London Jazz Festival. And that's a hall that will most definitely suit her singing style, I'm sure. Contemporary jazz saxophonist and social commentator Soweto Kinch received rave reviews for his release last year called The New Emancipation. It was an engaging mix of many styles, all of which the charismatic Soweto will hopefully be bringing to the Marsden Jazz Festival this year. Here's a taster from the album, and it's called On the Treadmill.
Thank you.
On the Treadmill from Soweto Kinch's 2010 release, The New Emancipation. And you can hear Soweto at the Marsden Jazz Festival, and he's one of the headline acts. And he plays at 4 p.m. on Saturday, the 8th of October, at the Mechanics Hall in Marsden. If you were lucky enough to be at Ronnie Scott's back in January, you may have heard this extraordinary pair of musicians playing from their highly acclaimed release, Lagrimas Mexicanos. Brazilian vocalist and guitarist Vinicius Cantuária and iconoclastic guitar man Bill Frisell are able to brilliantly fuse jazz and world music, and the results are gorgeous, gentle, inventive and overall optimistic music, which is impossible not to love. This is the instrumental track La Curva. La Curva, played and written by Bill Frisell and Vinicius Cantuária, taken from their remarkable album out last year called Lagrimas Mexicanas. And Bill Frisell is another one of the international artists coming to this year's London Jazz Festival. He'll be appearing with his 858 Quartet, a group conceived as a response to a series of paintings by artist Gerhard Richter. And they perform on the 20th of November at the South Bank Centre. This is Jazz Lineup with me, Claire Martin, on BBC Radio 3, on FM, online and on DAB digital radio. We're keeping the guitar theme going now. Jazz Lineup's Kevin Ajomra caught up with guitar legend Pat Metheny a few weeks ago. But before we hear from that interview, let's listen to a track from his new release called What's It All About. The album was made late at night in his New York City home, and it's a selection of songs that were all in the top 40 whilst he was growing up. The track we're about to play was written in 1976 by Henry Mancini, and it's called Slow Hot Wind. Thank you.
That was Slow Hot Wind, as performed and personalised by Pat Metheny from his new album, What's It All About, a solo guitar record. And Pat joins me now. Welcome to Jazz Lineup.
Great to be here.
This is the second solo guitar record that you've made. Back in 2003, there was One Quiet Night. It's a very, very different proposition, both to that record, because this is essentially a covers album. There were some covers on the first record, but this is all covers. And especially for people who know the Pat Metheny group, this is very, very different as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, the whole thing of playing solo for me is kind of, in some ways, new territory. I mean, I've got three quarters of, you know, the way through my life as a musician and, you know, hadn't really played solo much at all. I'd done an occasional recording thing or, you know, a tune here or there, but mostly I was involved, like you said, playing with the group or playing trio or playing in somebody else's project. And nevertheless, over the years, people would always ask, you know, could I do a solo concert of some kind? And I always thought, if I'm going to do a solo concert, I really want to come up with something different. Actually, I had just gotten a new piece of recording equipment, and I recorded a track, which ends up being one of the tracks on the record. And then the next day, I thought, well, that was nice. Maybe I'll do another one. And I picked another one, mostly tunes that I had been playing in sound checks and stuff, where I rarely play my own music. I'm always playing somebody else's stuff. And after about three tracks, it was like, okay, something is emerging here. And, you know, next thing I knew, I had this record. And, you know, the fact that I'm releasing two solo records sort of back to back like that, they really are the back and front somehow of the same coin. You know, that's a very different way to do it, but there's some kind of connection with the two records for me.
How do you actually feel about being in a situation with this record where you don't have any overdubs, where this is very much you in an unplugged setting? This is spontaneous. I know that there are a few edits on the album, but essentially, this is not about a produced record. And one of the great things about the group records, if you think about First Circle or As Wichita Falls, all those classic Pat Metheny group records, is at times we really hear the studio being used creatively. And this is very, very stripped down and, I suppose, for want of a better term, unplugged. Is that frightening, exciting, or maybe both?
More than anything, it's just different. I do seem to have this thirst or hunger for that is different along the way. I'm always looking for trying to find a different angle into the kind of musical / imaginative potential of what it is to be a jazz guy or what it is to be a musician. And there are so many possibilities. There's so many different ways to do it, but you do kind of have to come up with a context for each story to be told. And, you know, the formulation of conception and of context is an important issue for me, not just as a band leader with the group, but also on my own. I mean, you know, in a setting like this, you kind of do have to form some kind of a sensibility that you can build from. You know, you make choices. You say, okay, the vibe this time is going to be this or this. And you just get a different result. Again, not to say that it's better or worse, but it's different than if you say, okay, you know, I am going to allow the possibility of this or that to happen. If you kind of say, no, this is about this, it tends to focus you in a way that allows you to go deeper into whatever that world
is. Right, so there is some kind of a subtext. You're thinking about choices, I suppose, that have a wider artistic resonance. It's not just about you playing, even though the playing is obviously crucial.
Yeah, and particularly this record. I mean, it's funny that I would get this far along in my life as a musician, and this is the first time I've ever made a record that is not wedded to my compositional side as well.
I was about to say, it has no music by Pat Metheny at all.
It's the first time that's ever come up. Most of these songs are songs from before I was even a musician. I mean, from when I was 10 or 9 or 11 or 12. You know, I have three kids. I have two boys that are 12 and 10 and a little girl who's 2. And I think that every parent kind of relives a part of their life through their kids at a certain age. And I do think there's a little bit of that going on with me now.
Do you listen to their iPods at all?
Oh, yeah. You know, they're modern kids. You know, they're into like Daft Punk and, you know, and which I enjoy, too. I mean, we have no real musical problems. You know, it's easier for me to listen to what they like than for them to listen to what I like,
actually. I was about to say, does it go the other way? Will they listen to this stuff on your iPod?
But they're pretty, they definitely are more like, you know, groove-oriented as opposed to wanting to hear, you know, a bunch of ballads.
One of the great ballads, I suppose that's the best way to describe it, on the album, one of my favourite tracks, actually, which we'll talk about afterwards. This is Pat Metheny's interpretation of Antonio Carlos Jobim and Vinicius de Moraes' Garota de Ipanema, otherwise known as The Girl from Ipanema. That was Garota de Ipanema, the girl from Ipanema, as interpreted by Pat Metheny on his new album, What's It All About? Now, to me, when I heard this, there were two things that really struck me. Is that A, you seem to have taken quite a few notes out of the melody. It's very, very sparse. And there are long pauses that are dropped in where I'm thinking, oh, he's about to play, but he doesn't. And also, in terms of the mood of the track, I mean, this is one of the first Brazilian jazz tracks that I ever heard as a kid growing up, and it represented sunshine and sensuality and beautiful women on the beach, cariocas and all the rest of it. And I heard this, I'm like, but it's dark. He's taken the sunshine out of Rio, and it's very melancholic, isn't it, what you've managed to do with that?
Well, you know, a lot of the music on the record, it's almost like an impression of a song as much as the song.
Kind of fragments.
Oddly enough, it's about the second thing I learned how to play on the guitar. I couldn't play the official F chord. And there's probably guitar players out there that know one of the first big challenges, you have to push down these two strings with your first finger to form an F.
Physically, that's quite difficult.
And I couldn't do that when I was 11, but I could play leaving the top string open, which is the first chord of Girl from Ipanema. I recognize that right away. Oh, that's that song I heard, you know, those guys doing on the Ed Sullivan Show, which would have been Astrid Gilberto. So, I mean, I've lived with that song for, you know, it's like 40-some years now. And also, I have a very deep connection with Brazil. I lived there for a number of years. And
Didn't you work with Milton Nascimento at one point?
And Jobim, too.
Yeah.
And that song, to me, that track, is kind of like a poem. And, you know, there's things about Brazil that are not obvious.
Well, the lyrics are written by Vinicius de Moraes, who is one of the great poets of
Absolutely.
Brazil.
In the world of that music, there is an undercurrent. There's something else going on. That's part of what makes it great.
So appealing, yeah.
Is that there's a counterpoint of not just rhythm, but also of emotion. Mm. And I kind of wanted to look at that song. You know, there's the top level, like the bird's eye view of it. I kind of wanted to look at it from, like,
underneath
the waves, looking up into the crowd of people on the beach, you know, as opposed to the obvious stuff. And, you know, a lot of that is just kind of my feeling at that particular moment. I mean, I could play that many different ways. But, you know, I kind of played it that way, and I was like, wow, where did that come from? You know, like, that's worth documenting on the record, you know.
Okay, just to put things into context, you have other tracks on the album, as I say, by very well-known writers from the world of pop and rock, as well as, I suppose, Henry Mancini, who did Slow Hot Wind. We've got The Sound of Silence by Paul Simon, Bacharach's Alfie, Rainy Days and Mondays, That's the Way I've Always Heard It Should Be by Carly Simon. Do you still connect with popular culture in a major way? I mean, you talked about your children's iPods. Do you listen to pop music these days?
My thing is pretty much stuck on output. I don't get a whole lot of input time of any kind on a musical level because I've always got to finish this project, or I've got to mix that, or I've got to write a new piece for such and such. So if I have hours in the day that I can spend with music, it's usually more on the side of generating something new rather than absorbing something from before. That said, I'm always pretty aware of what's going on. I'm curious about what's going on, and that usually comes in the form of listening to stuff in the car when we're driving somewhere or whatever. And of course, like you said, the kids figure into that in a way too. But I have to say that my general sense of music is one that is balanced kind of in three equal parts: harmony, melody, and rhythm. And really, since the mid-70s, harmony has been somewhat removed from the equation. In fact, we could almost say that rhythm is the new harmony. I mean, I do feel like the kinds of strides that have happened in terms of funk, in terms of just kind of the general prominence of groove and beat in music, has been, you know, kind of this era has been a golden era for that.
Sure.
But at the expense of other aspects of music. Literally, it's a physical thing. The groove takes up a lot more space on the track now. And, you know, harmony somehow and virtuosity became suspect at a certain point, you know, which is still puzzling to me. I mean, you know, to me, that becomes more of a political question or a cultural argument. You know, I mean, the whole thing of like, you know, I'm really stupid. I don't know anything about music. Here's my record.
I don't want to be too sophisticated or too intelligent.
That became kind of a style in itself.
It's a statement, yeah.
You know, I kind of fundamentally reject that on an aesthetic level because I just get bored quickly if I only hear one or two chords. And so, I mean, harmony for me is in a kind of big part of what music is. And this particular period that I'm referencing on this record may have been the last period where harmony was sort of equal to melody and rhythm.
Well, I think that ties in really nicely with Betcha by Golly Wow by the Stylistics, which takes us back to that period in the 70s where you had these great house bands and writers at labels like TSOP, the Sound of Philadelphia, Motown. Before that, in the 60s, you had Stax. And when you talk about the way that that rhythm kind of took over, I think certainly in the early, in the mid-70s, if you think about the canon of Marvin Gaye and Stevie Wonder and those guys, and Tom Bell and Linda Creed, who wrote this piece for the Stylistics, they still could be harmonically sophisticated and have all these wonderful orchestrations and great big string orchestras. And you had the sense of the music being very, very, very full and very complete. Yet at the same time, there's a catchy melody as well. And it's interesting that you chose this particular track. Is this something that you heard a lot on the radio when you were growing up? Or?
I love the way you just described it. I'm with you all the way. You know, also there was a certain kind of creativity at work there. There was a real sense of invention. I mean, you could make an argument that, you know, the Stylistics were kind of avant-garde almost. You know, Tom Bell was a real alchemist, came up with wacky combinations of things.
Brilliant writer.
Nobody had ever really thought of with like sitars and horn sections. But at the same time, you're right, the groove factor was like emerging as a very central element. And you know, I really believe, I mean, it's one of the biggest cliches of all time, but I think it's really true. That's most personal becomes the most universal. And there's a personal stamp on that kind of writing that is timeless, you know, continues to have a life that can be interpreted a billion different ways that I'm not totally sure a two-bar drum loop 50 years from now will be able to be that robust in terms of giving back what was put into it in the first place. So, you know, there's something there. I mean, it's hard to quantify things about music. It's hard to have this kind of a discussion about music. But I do feel there is a sort of, you know, like intrinsic currency at work in music that, you know, is real somehow. And that's more or less what I'm always looking for. I think I was looking for that back then, too. You know, if you asked if I listened to that music then, yeah, I listened to it all the time. And I still do. I still love those tunes.
Okay, let's remind ourselves exactly how beautiful the melody of Betcha by Golly Wow is. And this fantastic interpretation from Pat Metheny. This is Betcha by Golly Wow. Pat, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. Thanks very much for coming in.
My pleasure. Great to be here with you. Thank you.
Pat Metheny and Betcha by Golly Well, taken from What's It All About, his brand new release. And my thanks to Kevin Legendre for that interview. Well, I've long been a fan and a friend of pianist-singer Leanne Carroll, whose new release is a fantastic collection of songs, which range from sassy, wailing, straight-ahead jazz to delicate and heartbreaking reworkings of pop and gospel tunes. Here's Leanne with sax ace Kurt Whalum from the CD Up and Down, and it's Moanin'.
As a moaning, cause of all the trouble I see, life's a losing game without me, and cares and woes I got moaning. Every evening finds a moaning, I'm alone, I'm crying the blues, I'm tired of paying my dues, and cares and woes I got moaning. Lord, I spent days and nights alone with my grief, and I pray somebody come along and give me relief. Every morning finds a morning, cause of all the trouble I see, life's a losing gamble to me. Cares and woes have got me, cares and woes have got me, cares and woes have got me ripped up the hour.
Got me. Moaning from Leanne Carroll, and you can hear Leanne, who also plays at the Marsden Jazz Festival this year. And she's also playing the Mechanics Hall just after Soweto Kinch at 7:30. So it's a great double bill for anyone going up to the festival. This is the 20th anniversary of Marsden Jazz Festival, and they've got some terrific music throughout the course of the three-day event, catering for all jazz tastes. Kenny Ball plays on the 7th, and Trio VD play on the 9th. So you can tell the variety there is very wide-ranging. As I mentioned earlier, Soweto Kinch and Leanne Carroll will also be appearing. That's the 20th anniversary of the Marsden Jazz Festival, and that runs from the 7th to the 9th of October in venues around the town. This is Jazz Lineup with me, Claire Martin, on BBC Radio 3, on FM, online and on DAB Digital Radio. And Jazz Lineup is sad to hear of the passing of English composer, bassist and band leader Graham Collier, who died suddenly on Saturday the 10th of September, aged 74. In 1963, Graham was the first British jazz graduate at the Berklee School of Music in Boston, and he also helped launch the jazz degree course at the London Royal Academy of Music. Our sister programme on Radio 3, Jazz Library, will be playing a tribute to Graham on October the 1st at midnight. Graham was often compared to Charlie Mingus, Gil Evans and Duke Ellington, so we're going to dedicate the next track to his memory. And it is Duke Ellington from a recording of his impressions of the Near and the Far East, composed by the Duke after his US State Department World Tour in 1963 and played by the Great Ellington Band. One of the Duke's visits on this tour included a trip to Ethiopia, and whilst touring there, one of the local musicians who was fortunate enough to collaborate and arrange for the Duke was tonight's concert guest, and it's Mulatu Astatke. Well, here's the Duke himself from the Far East Suite, and it's Ahmad.
Thank you.
Ahmad from Duke Ellington's Far East Suite, played by Duke Ellington with the Great Ellington Band. But before we get to the highlights of tonight's concert set from Vibes player and percussionist Mulatu Astatke, let's hear Mulatu fondly remembering his time with the Duke.
I was out from Berkeley, and then the American embassy said, "We're going to bring Ellington to Ethiopia." And they said, "I think you can communicate, understand with you better than anybody, because you are jam musicians and he's a musician. It will be so nice for you to be together, you know." So I said, "Great, fine." So he came over. One of the guys I've admired all my life, even at Berkeley, we used to do analyze his works. We used to use Count Basies and Gil Evans, and you know. So I met him. It was so great. We talked, and I told him how I admired him and everything. I said, "Okay, let me do an arrangement also." So I wrote a beautiful this arrangement for the big band, for his band. What an experience. And then I took him around, show him some different Ethiopian traditional musical instruments, which he found very interesting to him. Just to talk to him, to be with him, you know, exchange ideas, talk. He's our hero. I'm so proud and happy to be with him, you know.
And here's James Arben, musical director for Mulatu Astatke, describing the opening track of tonight's set, Duel, a track Mulatu wrote an arrangement for to be played by Duke Ellington's band whilst on his Ethiopian tour. Here James describes the piece.
It's been a track that I've played with him for many years, and it's a kind of a vibes and a saxophone feature. But it's kind of migrated over the years, because through this band, and it's a wonderful thing, because he's actually sort of become much more sort of confident within the band and sort of put his own mark onto his own tunes even more now. He loves to put intersections into another tune and then segues, and he's got this idea about having a suite, and he loves to put sort of interspersed tunes with another tune and then have these kind of little breakdown sections. And then at the end of Duel, he goes into his sort of nod to swing, a very brief nod to the swing tradition, and he goes into swing there at the end of Duel, and that's a kind of fairly new addition. That's been absolutely great, you know, working with him. And he's very keen on keeping things in the mode, but at the same time, he allows you enough freedom to sort of experiment with that mode as well. So it's a completely different sound world for me, and it's been something that I've kind of grasped and got the hang of, and but it's really opened my eyes to many, many different things in jazz.
And now to the music, recorded in front of an enthusiastic crowd at this year's Glasgow Jazz Festival on Thursday the 30th of June at the Platform Arts Centre in Easterhouse. And it features Mulatu Astatke on vibes and congas, James Arben on saxophone, flute and bass clarinet, Byron Wallen on trumpet, Alexander Hawkins on piano and keys, Richard Olatunde Baker on percussion, John Edwards on double bass, Daniel Keane on cello, and on the drums, Tom Skinner. This is Mulatu Astatke and his Steps Ahead band with Duel.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Please welcome onto the stage, all the way from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, the father of Ethio Jazz, Dr. Mulatu Astatke.
Good evening, thank you so much. We'll open up our evening jazz concerts program by a tune I call The Duel, which I have arranged long time ago for Duke Ellington Orchestra, but this time for a smaller group. This is a tune I call The Duel. Thank you. Thank you.
tune I call The Noel. The next piece, maybe you've seen the film called The Broken Flowers with Sharon Stone and Bill Murray. I would like to play one of my compositions from that film. I call Yekar Mosong. Thank you. Thank you.
Nyakamisol, played by Mulatu Astatke and his Steps Ahead band, closing tonight's concert set. And before that, you heard Duel. Mulatu Astatke on vibes on congas, James Arban on saxophone, flute and bass clarinet, Byron Wallen on trumpet, Alexander Hawkins on piano and keys, Richard Olatunde Baker on percussion, John Edwards on double bass, Daniel Keane on cello, and on the drums, Tom Skinner. Well, that's nearly it for Jazz Lineup this week. Next week, a preview of the Revoice Festival in the company of vocalist Georgia Mantio. And concert highlights from Django Bates' Beloved Bird project, recorded at this year's Cheltenham Jazz Festival. Plenty more jazz on BBC Radio 3 with Jazz on 3 with Jez Nelson on Monday nights at 11 o'clock. And this week, Jez presents concert music from the Marius Neset Quartet. But to finish today's show, something from a young, dynamic Armenian pianist who's been taking France by storm. Tigran Hamousyan plays high-energy music, which is a mix of jazz, Armenian folk and rock. He'll be in concert with tabla master Trilok Gurtu at London's Queen Elizabeth Hall on September the 24th. And here's a taster of his unique talent with the dramatically bouncy What the Waves Brought, perfectly conjuring up, for me anyway, scenes on Brighton Beach during this recent windy weather. Till next time from me, Claire Martin. Bye-bye.
Hello, I'm John Shea, and welcome to another edition of Through the Night on BBC Radio 3. I'm starting today with a concert from the Prague Radio Symphony Orchestra and their conductor Vladimir Válek. Dvořák goes into bat for the home side a little later with his Fifth Symphony, and the visitors are from France, the jazzy Second Trumpet Concerto by André Jolivet, and to begin, another symphony which, like the Dvořák, radiates sunny good humour and melodic freshness. It was hearing the First Symphony of his teacher Gounod that persuaded the 18-year-old Bizet to try his hand at writing one himself. The result was this confident display, which remarkably remained undiscovered for almost a century. Thank you.